Today's episode brought to you by TweakedAudio.com. Go check them out at TweakedAudio.com. 5 great styles and 7 great colors to choose from. All their audio accessories and earbuds designed to sound great with music, talk, whatever you're using them for. And on any device. Noise reduction is always key. Lifetime warranty on all of it. Use the code STREAM at checkout for 33% off your order. That's 33% off at TweakedAudio.com. Coming up on TMS, what is up with my voicemail?
Jen Law is a virgin again.
Shatner will not come back to Star Trek.
Oh, no. Clinton says she knows what's up in Area 51.
D. Trump gets it on with Sam Jackson.
Therapy Thursday and more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
I didn't ask to be photographed.
What did you say? Your face was asking. That's why I took the photo.
Go for your best. The Morning Stream. A little dab will do ya.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to TMS. This is The Morning Stream for Thursday, January 7th, 2016. I'm Scott Johnson. That guy, Brian Nibbett.
Yeah, who you calling that guy? Y'all don't know me.
That guy.
Y'all don't know me.
It's Thursday. That means two shows today. You get an AM and a PM, see?
That's right. You get this one in the morning. Good morning. Mm-hmm. That's my Kanye West, by the way. I've been listening to some Kanye.
Oh.
Good morning.
How has that gone for you?
Actually, I'm here to admit that I kind of like it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the 5 songs that I've been enjoying, Heard Him Say, featuring Adam Levine, Diamonds from Sierra Leone, featuring Jay-Z, features the feet of Jay-Z.
That's my Jay-Z impression.
which also features Shirley Bassey because it's Diamonds Are Forever, basically. The James Bond theme with new...
Shirley Bassey. Oh,
they talk over the whole damn thing.
Right. Well, are a lot of his songs like that? Are they sampley things?
No, not a lot of them. Well, a few of them. But of the ones that were recommended to me, I think that's the only one that I recognize the source of. All of the Lights.
Yeah.
Which doesn't feat anybody.
And no, there's no feat?
No feat.
Tarantino will be so disappointed.
So bummed. He hates that song because there's no feat.
Totally bummed.
Gotta Have It, which is a Jay-Z Kanye West joint. And Good Morning. Good Morning.
Good Morning.
Which he says a lot in that song. Good Morning.
These are all songs I don't think I'm aware of.
So I'll bet you've heard All of the Lights.
I probably have heard most of the songs and just don't know the names is my thinking. Because I know I've heard Kanye West songs. It's the reason I don't necessarily like them that much.
Sure.
But I like that you've done what we encourage on this show.
To do.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And it's the thing
give
we
it a
say.
Fair shake.
Yeah. Be open-minded. Be willing to see what is going on from another perspective.
Right.
I mean, it's one of the hallmarks of the stupid morning show we do.
Yeah.
So that's great. And so
your open-mindedness.
Yeah. So are you now, so now that you've had your taste, are you going to continue to delve deep into the works of Kanye West?
Probably not, if I'm being completely honest. But I won't be so quick to change the station if something comes on that is Kanye West.
Yeah.
Not that I really would like race to hit the dial. Not that I listen to the radio anyway. Yeah. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
This whole scenario, I don't even know what it is you're talking about. How
exactly.
Weird.
But, he's still a doofus when it comes to his, outside the music life, I think.
Yeah. At least what he portrays.
Right, exactly.
Sure.
But I can respect the music a little bit more. And I can see why, I can see why he is as popular as he is.
Well, I mean, look, he didn't get there just by doing nothing,
Right.
Well, he had something to say that somebody
had to have
liked.
Something going on, right?
Right. I always look at it that way. Like, I may not be in tune with whatever somebody's laying down.
Right. But I can admit, I cannot hear him. Mm-hmm. Without thinking Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live, who apparently, now that I hear this, I know he does it dead on Kanye West.
Oh, because you've been seeing that impression, but you just assumed, oh, it's probably close, or it's whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But, it's like, all right, I guess that sounds, that's probably what he sounds like. And now it's like, oh, he's Jay Farrell, man. He is dead on.
I haven't seen an SNL, and I can't tell you how
long. I know. We say, you say that every time.
Why though? Why don't I see it? What's my
deal? Well, what you have to do is
it's all on Hulu.
It's all on Hulu, but I think it's best consumed in
the middle of the night when you're tired and drunk.
Well, that's probably good. But no, I mean, basically like consumed in recommended segments. So don't watch an entire episode of SNL.
Okay. Just see the ones that are funny.
Right, exactly. Okay. Their digital shorts are almost always
those are always good. Yeah, yeah, I like those.
And Weekend Update is always on point. Yeah. I think that...
you like the new setup there, the new people? The new
I do, peeps? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Michael Che, Colin Jost, they are fantastic.
And I have heard good things about them, actually.
Yeah.
I've never seen a single thing, but they... Look, ever since Norm left, I've had a little bit of a hole in my life. And I know that really takes us back sometimes.
Sure.
But
sure.
Norm MacDonald, man...
Eh,
he was
the Germans
the guy.
Love David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, so the government yesterday, I can't do the voice.
Norm, by the way, is my favorite, Colonel Sanders.
By far, dude. He's the best. He really is the best. And for
he
a while.
Really is. I let you know, hey, Daryl Hammond was great, but mm-hmm. Norm MacDonald, he doesn't have to affect any sort of accent or... He's just Norm MacDonald with white crap on his
yeah,
face.
Yeah, he's Norm MacDonald in cosplay, which is really special. He's fantastic, and I miss him. And I shouldn't say I miss him because he's doing things, but just not a lot of things. He was supposed to be, for a while there, he was angling for Letterman's position, old job. Right. That would have been amazing. Fine, whatever. I still haven't seen a Colbert thing. Is that weird that I've not seen?
I haven't either. That's funny. I always promise myself I'm going to check it out, and I forget.
I know. Well, they don't make it easy to get anywhere, and I'm an unplugger, and so when things aren't easy for me to get, it's just forget it. Like, you've got to give me some...
Don't you have a way of recording over-the-air antenna stuff?
Used to, but they got the... No. I don't have a way to record the antenna because I don't have a DVR.
Okay.
But I can watch things over the antenna, but I'm just doing something else at 11 o'clock at night.
Sure. Well, but, you should be sleeping,
but
Scott.
When that one thing happened... Then went away. That was awesome. That service, what was it called?
Aereo,
right. And it was
Areola.
They had the Areola service, mm-hmm. which featured a large breast and then a huge areola.
You'd actually get a better signal when it was cold.
Yeah, it was.
Because the antenna would go up a little bit higher.
Yeah, but when I would run, it would crack and bleed.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and it went there. Oh. So. But no, like when that was here, that was so great because I got it over the over the freaking TV. It was mm-hmm. wonderful. I could AirPlay it. I could do all these things with it, and it was high def, and I could record stuff. And I watched Letterman that way.
Right.
It was fantastic.
Somebody decided it was just too convenient.
Yeah, and we were one of like four cities that even had it, mm-hmm. and we were so jazzed to be one of them. And blah blah blah. And I was willingly paying that $8 a month or whatever to get that, and then poof, it got sued out of existence. So
right.
Forget it. I got a question for you. This is a haunting request. We're going to have our own little Making a Murderer serial jinx moment on the show. Okay.
Yeah. I just finished. So 8 episodes into Making a Murderer.
Did that guy, did he leave the show? Is he still there?
Okay. Well, we could look at the, let's go ahead and pull up evidence B.
You know,
can you tell us what we're looking at here? The fact that the prosecutors would go over, would besmirch the reputations of these fine police officers is ludicrous.
You want to see a picture of my wiener?
let me send you some inappropriate texts.
That guy's my favorite new thing to come out of anything. He's great.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so what was I going to say? Oh, so, all right. So I have my own mystery to solve.
Did do a little CSI.
I need your help on this. So sure. I got a voicemail, or I saw the phone ring, and it said unknown caller, you know, one of those, right?
Yeah.
And I'm usually really hesitant to pick those up, but I just looked at it and I thought, why not? I'll just see. So I flicked the thing over and go, hello. And right then was when I lost him. So it was one of those like, oh, I waited too long, and
right,
now they went.
Sure.
So I'm thinking, well, if they do voicemail, then I'll see what this was about. I'm waiting for the voicemail. it bling, you have a new voicemail. Mm-hmm. I click on it and I hear this. Now I want you to listen very carefully and you try to tell me what's happening here. Okay.
Okay,
this is the voicemail I got yesterday from whoever this was. Here we go. That's it. That's the entirety of it. Now,
so it's the robot asking how many languages do you speak, and then he's frying the feet of that Gronk droid.
Well, let's hear that top part again, because maybe you're onto something. Here it goes.
It sounds like I don't understand what Maybelline Godfather.
Maybelline Godfather. Okay, I'm just going to play the top.
Maybe you're right. I don't know. I think the first part is, I don't understand what.
And then some name, maybe.
They mean. All right, let's hear it.
I don't know. And what's this at the end? What the hell's that?
Don't tase me, bro.
Honestly, it's to my phone. It wasn't like a Skype call or something from some, you know, some right. wiener listener who's just trying to be funny.
Oh, this is like TVZ Gun says, "Is it too early? Get a fish sandwich."
All right.
One more time.
I'm gonna try it again. Everyone, listen very carefully. Here we go. And I can't call it back because it was an unknown number. I don't have any idea. And I think the mystery maybe I'll never know. I don't know.
It sounds like it. Yeah. I think this is one of those. This is going to be an unsolved mystery for your entire life.
E. David C. says, I don't understand what Daisy Wallflower. Okay. Try slowing it down. That's interesting. Well, I can't do it.
Slowing it down is not going
to
help.
No, I can't do it live either because I have to use the software to do it. But I want people at home. I'm going to play it one more time for people at home. And I want you guys to just sleuth this thing up and then come back to me and see if you can tell me what's going on. Like the internet right now is way into solving this like Stephen Avery crime. So let's shift some of that energy toward how to solve Scott's phone message. Okay. So here it is one last time. All right, let me know.
Wow.
Because I have no idea.
I
bet Daryl has an opinion. He always has an opinion.
Well, let's ask him.
Yeah.
Let's ask Daryl.
Yeah, we'll ask Daryl when we call him, which is going to be right now. Where the hell's his thing? Oh, yeah. Here we go. Let's call Daryl. Let's get him in here. Let's find out if he knows. He's a smart guy, I guess. I don't know. What's he doing? He's working at a special place with special people doing special things. Right? Would you assume that about Daryl?
He's a very special person.
Yes, he's very special. That's how we say it these days. It's very PC.
I don't understand what Daryl's a special person.
Stump a Trek Nerd, and it's brought to you by
Keymailer. Whether you're a casual streamer or YouTube superstar, Keymailer makes it easy for content creators to request and receive keys for Steam games to showcase on their channels. Go to keymailer.co and sign up now.
Now. I like that. Now is good. Daryl, any thoughts on that recorded message?
I have no idea what to make of it.
All right. Well, how about the Zert part at the end? Hold on. What do you think of that buzz part?
I don't know. It's like something got looped through Skype multiple times and just really screwed it up.
Well, it's entirely possible that it was something like that, like a voice or a VoIP protocol-y thing that wasn't a phone.
Oh, it could be. Right. They still dialed you on your
right. Maybe, it sounds like they were drunk and they're saying something like, listen to this weird thing from Skype. And then they...
Well, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, I think we've talked about him on the show, at least somewhere, maybe not in this segment, but we've talked before about those numbers you could call when you were a kid, and they would be like these weird,
like kind of a party line, because wires were crossed kind of thing.
Yeah, and you could hear people talking, but also it was kind of haunting and like sound like some weird Russian guy
right.
saying numbers.
it would be alternate, like, so it would be the boop.
Yeah.
Boop, and then you'd talk between the boops and say, "What's boop your boop number?" Boop.
Yeah, something like that. And you can hear, like, here's the creepy weird phone call. I'm trying to find. I can't find it. But it used to be these numbers you could call, and they would. And I don't remember any of them. Or I'd call one live right now. But I used to love that. Because to me, it felt like we were talking to aliens or something. Mm-hmm. There's some top secret spy business.
Right.
And I don't think those are around as much anymore. Someone in the chat may know.
I was the only one that ever called one of those.
Lau Roman in the chat says he has the sound. So let's see. Was it this?
It's a sonic screwdriver?
Oh, sonic perfect. Screwdriver sound effect from maybe. Sure. Okay, hold on. Let's play that again. That's really annoying, but let's play it. Here you go. All right, that's the sonic screwdriver, okay? Now, compare it to... I can't jump ahead, but here's this. Could be.
Wow, pretty close. Ooh. Pretty close.
Maybe we're on to something.
You got a message from the doctor.
Hello? What's going on, then?
All right, Daryl.
I think that's somebody that knows you. I don't think that's as mysterious as you think.
Well, I mean, they have my number, so very well could be.
Well, they dialed a number. If they, you know, whether or not they know you or not, they dialed a number that reached you, and who knows if...
Well, I got a number from a Nevada area code once where the guy, I picked it up, and the guy, I thought it was my brother because he was in Vegas at the time, and I called, and I thought it was him, so I picked it up, and I don't remember the exact words, but he was yelling at me that the car wasn't there, man. Where's the car? The car's not there, man.
Really?
Yeah. And kept yelling that at me. And I said, who is this? Listen, man, the car's not there, man. No car. There's no car there, man. Like that.
Take the motorcycle.
You gave me keys to a car that doesn't effing exist.
And I was like, I think you might have the wrong number. Where are you? I'm in Reno, man, or whatever it was.
You can start by wiping that effing smile off your effing rosy face.
You're effed. All right, Daryl, let's get to your question. Next generation. That's what it is. All right. In the next generation episode of the game, you know the one.
Oh, yeah.
The crew, I almost said the crew, I don't know why. The crew becomes addicted. Oh, because it becomes. Becomes addicted to the discs and cones game. Dr. Crusher asks Data to come to sickbay and tells him she is working on an experiment. Ugh, my eyes are being weird. What does Dr. Crusher tell Data she is experimenting on? Was it A, bioactive silicone, B, trinitrogen chloride?
Trinitrogen.
Thank you.
trinitrogen chloride.
Nitrogenase. Nitrogenase compound.
I guess. I don't know.
Nitrogenase.
Yeah, genase.
Or clancium oxide.
Oh, the novelist.
I'm a big fan of Tom Clancy Amoxide.
Yeah, he's great. You know, he's really missed. His books haven't really been the same since he died. They still write books with his name on them. Have you noticed that? It's like Tom Clancy's breach of contract. And then below that, I'll say,
Pavelka.
Yeah, some guy that no one's ever heard of.
They do that with Patterson, too. James Patterson's, the continuing saga of James Patterson's Alex Cross.
Oh, I didn't know James Patterson died. I thought he was alive, James Patterson.
He is.
Oh, he's just not writing him anymore.
He's just not writing. He's kind of semi-retired. I think he's involved in like a, yeah, Alex Cross would do that. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, it's fine. We have a breakfast meeting. What's we'll going on?
We'll take a venti caramel macchiato, please.
I'm really enjoying that Mitch Rapp series that someone in the Tadpole recommended. It's similar to those books we just talked about, but I really like them. They're real good. Anyway, they're super digestible. Just go, nom, 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 nom. Just chew them up, need them. All right, Daryl. So there's your question. You guys are all out of candy. That's fine with me.
We're all out of candy.
But you're not out of these. Today in Star Trek history.
Ooh, it's a good one, too. Back in 1979, Star Trek the Motion Picture came out in theaters. In the US. Wow.
I thought it was 80. Why did I think it was 80? Oh, well. It's not that big a difference, but for whatever reason in my head, I had it as 80.
I'm pretty sure it was 79.
And we didn't get...
I would trust Daryl on this.
Oh, yeah, no, I believe you. But what's the when did Khan come out? Like 82? Something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so a couple years, that makes sense. Well, good job to 79. You produced one good thing. What else came out in 79 that anyone gives a rat's ass about? Nothing. 79's a boring year.
Yeah, but it's funny. It just dawned on me. You played yesterday a little clip from New Year's Rockin' Eve 79, right?
Oh, the Dr. Pepper, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I remember exactly where I was. I was watching that. I was watching New Year's Rockin' Eve 1979. I was being babysat, I was 10 years old. I was hanging out with my mom's friend's daughters, mm-hmm. Shannon and, oh, man, can't remember the other one's name, but
and they showed you your first taste of love that night.
Well, it's funny you say that. I did have a crush on the one that wasn't Shannon. I can't remember her name. Gina and Shannon.
Wow.
They were sisters and older, like, you know, 18, 19.
Yeah.
And we played Operation. We watched Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve, and they had a single of Rockin' Robin by Michael Jackson that we played over and over too.
So you heard this.
New Year's Rockin' Eve 1979. Brought to you by Dr. Pepper.
That was totally. I remember actually watching that on their big wooden panel console TV.
Wow. Look at us bringing the memories back to you there.
Yeah.
At the time, did you think it sounded like somebody from the 40s? Because it sure sounds like it now.
No, I didn't think that then. It's probably like, can we go play some more Operation?
Can we play Operation? Don't touch his funny bone.
No, we didn't play Doctor. We played Operation.
Yeah, Operation's different. That's when you actually cut into one another and create blood. That's what happens there. All right, Daryl, good deal. That's a motion picture. That's a movie. That's the thing that came out and was terrible then and is not so great now, but the extended edition helps it a little bit. Why don't you give us your answer to this here question about the game? Do you remember the answers, though? Because they're all a little bit weird, these names.
Silicone, trinitrogen, nitrogenase.
Yeah.
Good on bread, but doesn't taste very good.
You'd never eat it alone, but you might have it on a sandwich, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clancium. It's not that.
What, the clancium one?
So you're ruling out clancium oxide?
Yeah, that's too obvious.
Oh, he was so good in Shawshank Redemption, though. The clancium oxide.
Clancium oxide brown.
You know, he's in the Warcraft movie. I'm pretty jazzed about that.
Yeah.
He plays.
I know, we're now in the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd been outside of 2016 until now. Now we are inside 2016.
Yeah. You might say we've penetrated it.
We have penetrated 2016.
Yeah. I don't.
And we're going to get Deadpool. We're going to get Civil War. We're going to get Warcraft
else?
Movie.
Oh,
we're
going
to get yet another Star Wars movie.
Yeah, Rogue One.
Rogue One. What else are we getting? We're getting Doctor Strange.
I think so. Is that this year?
We're getting...
You're getting the Winter Soldier. You mentioned that, Civil War.
I did. They're not Winter Soldier.
That's what I meant,
Yeah.
Civil War. There's another big thing. What's the other big thing?
Is Star Trek this year, Beyond?
Oh, yeah. Beyond's
this
year.
Star Trek Beyond, right.
Yeah, yes. That's the other thing.
X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Batman v. Superman.
Oh, yeah. Batman, Veronica.
Veronica, and Superman.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Ghostbusters. Suicide Squad.
I'm in line, bitch. Get out of the way.
Independence Day Resurgence.
Oh, shit. I really have. You know what? It's funny. I'm cautiously optimistic about that because Which I feel one? Like the Independence Day thing. Because you know, I don't like that first one much. I have a lot of problems with it. Right. But I think I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'm kind of actually excited about the sequel. I shouldn't be because I'll bet it's poo. It's gonna be poo. And there's no Randy Quaid to fly up the butt of a ship this time. So
no Will Smith, no Randy Quaid.
No.
Nope. But
do you hear how they explain? I guess. Will Smith.
No, how are they explaining his absence? Because I did see something that they were talking about that, but
it's something about his character died in a mission of some sort, and they just kind of retroactively talk about it. I think somebody is in there that's supposed to be a son who went in his footsteps and is now like he's basically just a stand-in for the same character. What was the other deal? Oh, and Will Smith said he would have been in it, but it crossed schedules with his not Hateful Eight. What's it called? The Angry Chickens. The Final Countdown. What are they called? The bad guys. The DC bad guys. The Suicide Squad. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The Angry Chickens.
The
Final Countdowns. Anyway. So there's that. Oh, there's no spoilers. Are you kidding me? The Will Smith thing is not. Look, we cannot put Independence Day or its sequels in the spoiler category.
Right, exactly.
It can't be, okay? Can't be. All right.
Oh my God.
I can hear Corinne yelling at her radio right now. She hates spoilers. Not spoilers. Not. She doesn't like the. She hates
right. the she hates
thing.
The concept of spoilers.
Yeah, she thinks spoilers are stupid and no one should worry about them. Next up, Daryl, answering this question. Sorry. You got as far as the mayonnaise one. Or no, you got all the way to clancium oxide.
What did I do? Oh, I started at the bottom.
Yeah.
And I'm going up.
Yeah.
Trinitrogen, that's just boring. Oh, and is it silicon or silicone?
Silicone.
I always get those confused.
Silicone. Well,
that's the rubbery stuff, isn't it?
Silicon. Let's say that.
Well, there's no
E. That's halfway in between.
Yeah, I'd say silicon.
Okay.
There's no E at the end, if that helps you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, silicone. That's the mineral.
Yeah.
Silicone. Silicone.
Silicones.
I want to get one silicone, please.
That'd be a thing I'd order from a guy in a truck. A silicone.
What flavor silicone would you like?
What do you like, little boy? I never trusted those guys. They always freaked me out.
Yeah. Well, especially after you saw inside one of those trucks.
Yeah, dude. Oh, that food truck in Anaheim. Yeah. Oh, it was so bad. It was like a prison riot in there. It was awful. Anyway.
I think I'm going to... This might be the first one I got wrong this year.
Sorry, Florida man. You win today. Silicones would be my Madonna cover band.
Well done. Well Nicely done. Done, sir.
Extremely well done. Sorry, Daryl. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'll say nitrogenase.
Nitrogenase.
Or whatever the heck it is.
I will.
Nitrogenase.
Chloride is the final word on it. All right, let's find out if you're right. Is he right? Does he keep a perfect week? Nope. Bioactive silicone or silicon.
Oh.
This is from season 5. She tells him she is experimenting on bioactive silicone.
Oh,
whoa.
Season 5, yeah.
Wait, the game was all the way in season 5?
I thought it was way earlier.
So did I.
I thought it was three.
Yeah, 2 or 3 at the most. Huh. Well, anyway, she tells him she's experimenting on a bioactive silicone and needs her tricorder programmed for the experiment. While she is doing this, she disables data. And I don't mean data like, you know, computer data. I mean data.
Right.
You want to see me, Doctor?
Yes, Data. I need to ask you to do something for me. I'm working on a new experiment with bioactive silicon. Would you reprogram this tricorder to these specifications?
Certainly.
I'm sorry to bother you with it, but I need it done quickly.
It does not bother me, Doctor. In fact, I am happy...
Oh, shite.
Didn't even let him finish his sentence. She just, like, pulled the plug.
Yeah, that was rude. That was very rude. That's a bad episode. It does not hold up at all for me.
No.
Yeah, I don't think it's good.
Hey, you know that guy in the Man in the High Castle thing? The guy that's the
bounty hunter?
No, the cellar guy in the museum or whatever he is.
Everyone loves
the antiques dealer.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy. Yes. Yeah. Who's he?
Yeah, I think he could play Data, I think.
Oh,
he totally could.
Yeah, why not? He's a little older, though. I mean, he's a little wrinkly, don't you think?
No, not really.
He could pull it off?
Put enough foundation on him.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Put enough gold foundation on anyone and you got your Data.
Right, exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. I hadn't...
He looks a lot like Brent Spiner.
He kind of does, yeah.
Oh, his scenes with the Marshal? The Marshal, Brian. One of the great villains of TV ever.
God, yes.
He needs to show up again. I need him back in my life. Can he? Yeah, he's around. Sorry.
Yeah.
Spoilers, he's not dead. It's not really a spoiler that he's not dead. It'd be a spoiler if he was dead, right? I don't know. Doesn't matter.
I didn't think the antiques dealer had scenes with the Marshal.
Oh, yeah, no, he came in there and... Oh, wait, antique dealer or bookseller? I'm thinking of the bookseller.
Oh, you're thinking of the bookseller. I'm talking about the antique dealer, the guy who has a little the crush on the Japanese woman and comes over to their house and has dinner with them. And
oh, he'd be, yes, he'd be a great data. Yeah. Did you say data?
I didn't say data.
Oh, I thought someone said he'd be a great data. That cracked me up. Daryl is the incorrect Trek nerd today. You can find him at The Trek Nerd on Twitter. You can also find him at This Week in Trek at thisweekintrek.com and a show called The Grumpy Cast. And he will now play a game with us of his own devise. What is it?
What is it? That's a good question. Let me scroll up here. Here. Star Trek weapon or exercise technique.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Here's your theme.
Let's play Pac-Man.
All right.
Okay.
Isolytic burst.
Isolytic
burst.
Burst. It's another favorite ice cream treat of mine.
Isolytic cherry burst.
That sounds good.
Isolytic. You know, I mean, there's isometric exercises, but I don't know about isolytic.
Yeah.
I think that's where he's trying to steer us.
Yeah. That sounds science fiction-y.
Right. So Trek stuff is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's Trekkian.
I agree. Trevorkian. We think it's of Trek origin. That's what we think.
Yes. Okay. Are you sure about that?
I'm 100% sure.
Even more so now.
Yeah, even more now.
An isolytic burst is detonated by the Sona, forming a subspace terror in Star Trek Insurrection.
Of course it is. Insurrection. Rhymes with erection. Dirt. All right, here's news.
Television highlights of the news of yesteryear.
It's the news, and it's brought to you by...
Brought to you by thanks that go out to our subreddit, where most of today's news came from. Visit it at frogpants.reddit.com and put your own favorite articles in there.
Yeah.
As long as they're true.
Yeah, we don't want... Don't try to stump punk
don't
us.
Don't onion us, yeah, all right?
We know. I mean, if it's onion.com, fine, we'll figure it out. Yeah, but if you send us something that's fake... Like, if it seems fake, snope it for us first and then put it in.
Right.
People have been good in there, though. It's all been good stuff.
Use your heads.
Yeah,
for
use
a
your
change.
Heads. At the stuff.co.nz website, we have some entertainment news for you, Brian, to start things off.
All right.
I know you like a little entertainment news in your life.
I do like some entertainment news.
Jennifer,
entertain me.
Jennifer Lawrence says she's officially a virgin again because she's too picky.
I don't think that's how that works.
I don't either. My understanding of that is different than hers.
I don't think that's how virginity works.
I don't think that's how it belongs in a museum, Dad. It was described as a no-filter, no-BS interview with Glamour magazine, and with subjects like feeling like a virgin again, using Planned Parenthood as a teen, the pay gap, fancying Larry David, 43 years her senior, dressing like a slutty power lesbian, and being a self-described effing lunatic.
Wow.
So
issue of Glamour is sitting upstairs on our ottoman. Tina got it.
Really?
For some reason. Yeah.
Well, you should read that.
Now I have to. I want to read about her fancying Larry David. That's the
that's interesting.
Isn't that funny that's the thing that I take out of all that? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
That's pretty good.
Well, it says this, since hitting the scene with the Hunger Games 4 years ago, I don't think that was when she hit the scene. Maybe it was when she got an Oscar nomination for The Lovely Bones or whatever, or The Winter's Winter's Boner. What was
Winter's
it?
Bone.
Oh.
Jeez.
actress Jennifer Lawrence has conquered Hollywood thanks to her incredible acting skills that earned her an Oscar for Silver Linings Playbook in 2012. That was a long time. It feels like yesterday that was. I can't believe that was 2012.
Yeah.
And being so refreshingly modest and likable, but despite her fame, the 25-year-old says she wishes she could fly under the radar, but her, quote, mouth has made it impossible, unquote. Mm. Promoting her new movie, Joy, or as they say in Latin countries, Joy.
Hoy.
Hoy. She used the opportunity to turn political and spoke about the three murders of Planned Parenthood Clinic in Colorado, which she described as not an attack on abortions, it's an attack on women. Then she goes on to talk about all this other stuff. Slutty power, lesbian, blah, blah, blah. And this just in, beep, 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 during her New Year's Eve walk-on with that dude on NBC, I forget his name, with that kind of gray hair. He seems young, but he has gray hair.
Oh, what, Anderson Cooper?
No.
Gray hair.
He was on... It's not The Rock and Eve is the other channel.
Give me something else. Give me something else to work with.
Get his name. He's gray. He's grayer on top than he is toward his sideburns, which is the opposite of everyone else as they gray. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
He's real rambunctious. Maybe gay. I don't know.
Andy Cohen. I don't know. Give me more.
I don't know. Is it Andy Cohen? Maybe.
I don't know.
He wears a suit. It's gray, a gray suit to go with the hair. Freddie McThunderpants is not
Carson
correct.
Daly.
No. He was on with Carson Daly though.
Okay, here we go. New Year's Eve with Carson Daly. Yeah. Let's see who else was on that.
Not
Andy Cohen joins Carson Daly and voice coach Gwen Stefani.
That's it.
Andy Cohen.
That's it. I don't know that. I don't know who these people are.
He's the guy on Bravo. He's on every Bravo channel.
Is he a gay man?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, he struck me as extremely affable and nice, and that's often how I find gay people.
He seems like a really, really nice guy.
Yeah.
But
the truth is, the more heterosexual...
But he's on every single... Like, basically, it's every freaking Bravo show has Andy Cohen. Let's talk about The Real Housewives.
All right. So he's...
He has that show Watch What Happens, which is... kind of the guest, you know, brings on a couple of guests. He's got somebody behind a bar making drinks for some reason.
He's the Chris Hardwick of Bravo.
He is the Chris Hardwick of Bravo. Boy, you could not have.
It's pretty good, right?
Right. You have nailed him down to a T.
Not saying the Chris Hardwick's gay. All right, that's not what I mean.
And he's anyway. Same age as us, 47.
Oh, all right. Well, he looks pretty good for our age. Well, he's not our age. Hey, hold, slow down.
He's a little older than us. Okay, fine.
Slow down. He's not there yet, man.
All right, okay.
Anyways, so she said on that thing, she popped in there and said that her and Liam Hemsworth had a little fling-flong on the outside there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, during the Hunger Games business. Because, so on screen, of course, they have this sort of relationship back and forth thing, right? But off the set, he asked her, was there a little something going on? She goes, look, he's super hot. What do you expect? What would you do? He said. She said to him. And Andy Cohen said, well, I know what I'd do. Which also led me to think he might be gay.
Yeah, I think he is.
Anyway, so her and Liam Hemsworth, her and Thor's brother, not Loki, but the other one.
Right.
They're getting it on. Or they were.
You know there's a third Hemsworth brother?
I heard of that, but I don't think I've seen him do anything. Are they the new Baldwins?
Maybe they could be, right? The Australian Baldwins.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Chuck Hemsworth. I don't know what his name
is. Chuck Hemsworth. Sounds like a guy that owes you money.
Right.
Ah, freaking Hemsworth. Freaking Chuck. Someone find his name. What's his real name? Do we know his name? We don't know his name. Or what he's in. Is he in things?
Yeah, he's...
He's fat, says he, David C.
He kind of is the...
Well, wait, okay.
Google third Hemsworth.
This is one of my favorite things, actually, is the...
Luke Hemsworth.
Luke Hemsworth. That makes sense that his name is Luke. Sure. Luke, I am your brother. So when these guys all do this, I like it because it reminds me of all my other favorite groups of brothers that work in Hollywood. And I think my favorite is the Murray brothers. You got Brian Doyle Murray, and then that other Murray that was on those TV shows. I forgot his name.
Oh, I don't remember a third.
Dermot and Greg. Remember that show?
Yeah.
That little puffy friend, accountant guy, lawyer friend.
That wasn't...
That's a Murray.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow, Luke Hemsworth?
Yeah.
Just as freaking good-looking as the other damn Hemsworths.
No, that'll happen to you. I think it'd be funny if their parents were just like... dingo face looking weirdos.
like the two negatives that multiply to make a positive.
Yeah, basically. right. You got their weird problems, facially somehow joined together to make the perfect men. Somebody find the other Murray boy. Forget his name. But anyway, so they got those three. You got the Baldwins, which are the obvious choice as a famous group of brothers. Right. You got the Wahlbergs. You got two of them, right? Mm-hmm. As far as I know. Anyone else? Any other famous ones anyone can think of? Be thinking out there, everybody.
There's the Farleys. There's, Chris Farley's brother who looks...
Oh, yeah, you could say that. Well, I mean, he's working in the business.
They're not as interchangeable as, like, the Baldwins and the...
Well, who's like that, though? Oh, I'm thinking of...
The Owens is a good one.
Yeah, Owens brothers. The other SNL connection, I can't think of it all of a sudden. Belushi's.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Belushi's is a good one,
Jim
too.
And John Belushi. Yep.
Quaids.
The Quaids, yeah.
Quaids.
Quaids. The Quaids.
It's your Astemaz.
Well, anyway.
All right.
This has been a fun walk down memory
trip
lane.
Trip down brotherly lane.
Yep, brotherly lane. William Shatner, you know him as this famous person.
Hey.
That guy
will not be back as Kirk in Star Trek Beyond. There have been rumors floating about that Captain Kirk was going to make an appearance outside of the Chris Pine version of Captain Kirk.
Right.
And says don't look for him because despite early rumors that they had tried to reprise his role as James C. Kirk for the 50th anniversary adventure. Oh, I didn't know it was 50th anniversary. That's interesting. Hmm. Shatner tells SFX magazine he will not be beaming aboard the Enterprise. Quote, there was never any conversation, he says. Claiming he had no involvement in preliminary plans to resurrect the iconic character in the rebooted movie universe. While his late co-star Leonard Nimoy made nostalgic cameos in the 2009 and 2013 Into Darkness movies, Shatner last wore the Starfleet uniform in 1994's Star Trek Generations. The film that saw Kirk unceremoniously offed by Malcolm McDowell's scheming Dr. Saran, or as I like to say, offed by a ladder he held on to. That's what killed Kirk.
That is going to kill Kirk, right? Yeah. Yep. Oh, this ladder fell on me.
I'm a little weirded out that my 21-year-old daughter was born the year Generations was in movie theaters.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, that weirds me out. Hmm. I don't like thinking about this. Your son was not yet born.
No, no.
My other two kids were not even considerations yet.
That's crazy.
And now one's 18, one's 15, and the other one's married and 21.
He's just barely older than the Matrix.
Oh, think of that.
Yeah.
Weird.
Weird, right?
Yeah. And what would it be? I mean, okay, so you and I are born in 69, right? Mm-hmm. What? We never look back at 69 and go, oh, that was the year that freaking West Side Story came out, or, you know, whatever shitty right. thing came out in 69. Right. But kids today...
No, Woodstock. We look back and say, oh, yeah, I was born the year Woodstock happened.
I guess so. But it seems like ancient. Like, does it seem ancient? Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. If you ask Tristan...
I don't think that when Nick is our age, he's going to be saying, oh, yeah, I was born the year...
it was 2000.
Dude, Where's My Car came out.
No, but what I mean is...
Because that won't be his voice is already way deeper than that.
Yeah, he's way deep now. Yeah. Deeper than mine almost. And he's almost my height.
He becomes a prosecuting attorney in Wisconsin. That'll be his voice.
He's growing like a weed. It's freaking me out. But your son, does he look back, say, on The Matrix, which I'm sure he's seen by now.
Yeah.
And go, that is ancient. Like, I feel like the tail is longer for them than it was for us. From 69 to 85, let's say. Mm-hmm. For you and I, that was a huge change in culture, quality, technology. Like, everything had made giant leaps. From 99 to today, it's not that big a deal.
Right. No, that I'll agree with, right, is that, you know, he's witnessed a lot more rapid change and invention and creation of, you know, world-changing things, like stuff, you know, parts of the internet, social media, 3D printing, like all these things that he's been around for. And we had like electric typewriters. Not even color televisions. That was before us too. But yeah. You know, our youth saw fewer, it feels like our youth saw fewer innovation.
Well, our kids have all grown up with some form of the internet, and that's kind of a strange thing in the sense, I mean, Taylor was born the year essentially it happened, that we got the internet as a thing that people could use on computers that they owned. Technically the internet has existed since the year you and I were born.
Well, sure. Yeah.
But
do you remember the first website you actually went to, like when you hooked up your 2400 baud modem?
First actual, like, WWW HTML,
yes.
That thing,
yes. Uh-huh.
I think was yahoo.com.
Oh, really?
I think so. I'm not 100% on that. That's the first one I remember. I remember very distinctly going, oh, my gosh, I can search for things here? Like, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
If somebody went back and, like, you know, could go back in time and watch me, I'll bet it was something else, but seems like that was memorable for me.
Mine was an X-Men fan site. Like,
oh, wow.
You know, had
that's awesome.
Yeah, had like comic book stuff, and
that's great.
Yeah,
I like yours better than mine. Mine's boring.
Did you ever? I know you did AOL. Did you ever log on to CompuServe?
Oh yeah, had CompuServe for a while. I had Prodigy for a while.
Prodigy, wow.
I had a BBS. I ran a BBS for a little while. That was pretty fun. We had GIFs on there that took like 3 hours to download.
Right.
No, that was a fun transitional period. And before all of that, me and my buddies were always on Usenet, like doing, that's how we got the Doom demo before the game came out. And that was some dark web back then. That was cool.
Wow.
Yeah, you had to be like smart to know what you were doing there.
All right, I'm going to give you a quick trivia question just to show how quickly things change. Do you remember the woman who was touted, the supermodel who was touted as the most downloaded woman on the internet in like the early 2000s, I think.
Most downloaded woman on the internet in the 2000s. I'm going to say, boy, that question sure rings a bell, but the answer isn't. But I'm going to say...
She was only, like, I don't think you ever saw her in anything else, but like, downloaded photos on the internet. Ninja Steve is close. I think her first name was Cindy. And Jay Calhoun is, I think, right on. He's wrong on the first name, but right on the last name. Yeah, Cindy Margolis.
Oh, who's that?
She was this woman who was like on every friggin' site, you know, like had photos of her, bikini shots and stuff like that. And she at one time touted herself as the most downloaded woman on the internet.
Oh, here she is. Cynthia Dawn Margolis, age 50 now.
Wow.
Yeah, she, let's see here. I'm just
reading. Oh, she's in Sharknado 3. Surprise!
Oh, sweet! That's exciting.
Yeah.
She was in Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery in 97. She was on Ally McBeal once. Played herself.
CindyMargolis.com. They don't call me the queen of the internet or the most downloaded woman in the world for nothing.
Wow. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. That's pretty totally much exactly.
Yeah, they do. They totally do.
I think that's the very definition of calling you that for nothing. You're just downloaded. What did you do?
Yeah, what'd you do? What are you up to? What's going on with your life?
Yes.
I've got a story here about Donald Trump, and then we're going to take a break.
All right. Let's talk about
it. Donald Trump is sparring with Samuel L. Mother Effin' Jackson.
Good. Good. If there's somebody who can finally take Trump down,
yeah,
it's Nick Fury.
I agree. Got the patch over the eye. Hold on to your butts. I hate this hacker shit. All that stuff, right? I made two Jurassic Park references for some reason. I don't know why. Anyway, he's mad, or Donald Trump is fighting with him because, according to Sam Jackson, Donald Trump cheats at golf. So for the last 24 hours, fueled by accusations that each other cheats at golf, this is where this is all coming from. There's more to it than that. As the leader of the GOP field, Trump is on the other side of the political divide from Jackson, a longtime Democrat who backed President Obama's presidential campaign. But their dispute has its origins in an interview that Jackson gave to Rhapsody, the American Airlines magazine. Shouldn't laugh, but that's funny to me. In which he was asked about golfing with Trump. Who's the better golfer? Oh, I'm sure I don't cheat. Oh, I am for sure I don't cheat, says Jackson.
Nice.
He said he's more P.T. Barnum than politician. I don't think he believes half the things he says, and says that he's a big freaking cheater in golf. So that did not sit well with Donald H. Trump III, who said on Tuesday, that's not really his name, he tweeted, because that's where he likes to say things now, is the tweeter on the Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Boy, that 10,000 character limit's going to be a real problem if we get Trump.
Oh, my God.
Good Lord.
No kidding.
Anyway, he said he didn't know Jackson, and, quote, to the best of my knowledge, haven't played golf with him, and I think he does too many TV commercials. Boring. Not a fan. Unquote.
Too many TV commercials. Boring.
That is such a Trump answer, dude.
All right.
Boring.
I think he does too many TV commercials. Boring.
Not a fan, he says at the end. You're an ass.
He keeps asking me what's in my wallet. I'm not a fan.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. That is such a Trump thing to say.
Yes.
That whole say, I mean.
Yes. If anyone had any doubt that Trump writes his own tweets, right there is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If not, there's somebody doing a real good job of carrying it, you know, carrying on the tradition or whatever. But I don't. Look, I have gotten out of the business of being constantly on Trump's case.
Sure.
It's going to be whatever it's going to be. I'm going to view it from however I view it. People are going to see it however they want to see it. But I guess I just want to say this. My problem with this sort of thing is that people hear him say things like, I don't think I play with him and he does too many TV commercials. Boring, not a fan. That they say, that's him talking straight from the heart. That's
right,
what we
exactly.
need in this country. We need to make it great again with somebody who's willing just to say it like it is. No, this is just how Trump talks. That's not
yeah,
saying it like it is.
We're all not fans of Samuel L. Jackson. Hate Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, he's bad. They turned white Nick Fury into black Nick Fury. What a bunch
there's
of...
There's our southern accent again.
In Pulp Fiction...
Samuel L. Jackson wants to take our guns.
He sure does, except in every movie he's in, he's got one. Now, how do you explain that? Yeah. Whatever. We know Southerners aren't stupid or crazy. We didn't say that. We're just evoking a voice. Listen to yesterday's show.
Says Florida man.
Yeah,
come
says,
on now.
Says somebody
Hot
named
kettle.
Florida man. You've named yourself after a phenomenon. known as Florida Man.
Right.
Ding. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, it's Therapy Thursday with my sister Wendy, and we've got a hell of a question here today. So we'll get to that shortly. Before that, though, we will play music. Brian brought some, and I'm sure it's great, so play it now.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm actually just sure it's fine.
Okay.
Ryan from Michigan wrote in, says, Dear Surfer Dave and Bad Cop, whoa, on January 9th and 10th, I will be competing for what would be my dream job. They're opening a Legoland Discovery Center about an hour from me, and I've been chosen to compete for the position of Master Builder.
Nice.
Basically the person who builds all the models throughout the center. For good luck, I'd love to hear a cover of Everything is Awesome from the Lego Movie. If not this, I would take a song about a poultry, pork, cheesy, and zesty sauce sandwich.
Oh, I might have that here.
The tender crisp bacon cheddar ranch.
Wait, is there pork on that? Oh, it's bacon.
The bacon, yeah. Yeah. Sung by a former lead singer from a 90s alternative band who later became a country legend.
Is he a country legend?
No, I don't think he's a country legend.
All right.
All right, Ryan. Well, I hope you get the job. That would be so awesome. That is a dream job. Get paid to put Legos together all day.
Yeah.
So when you look for covers of Everything is Awesome, you find a lot of songs that sound exactly the same, right? It's like all the same, the same rave beat. However, I did locate one performed by Sean Patterson and Sammy Allen. This actually might have been included on the soundtrack as an alternative version. I'm not sure. Somebody out there might be able to confirm for me. But it is Sean Patterson and Sammy Allen with an unplugged acoustic version of Everything is Awesome.
Oh, all right, let's play it. Before I do, Florida Man wanted to clarify something. He says, Florida is really the least southern state in the South. We export cows and perverts. Our favorite pastime is building strip clubs and raising sugar babies. So there you go.
Nice.
That sounds about right. Here you go. Here's your song. We'll be back in a minute. Stay tuned.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we're living our dream. No need to rock the boat when we stick together. Side by side, playing right in, fitting in forever. Let's party forever. We're the same, I'm like you, you're like me. When we're working in harmony.
Oh, there's the end of it. Here's the short now.
Eat as many dots as possible within the time limit.
Yes! Yes!
They are all that is man. This is the Morning Stream.
Right. That was a shorter song than I expected.
It is. You know, and when you hear it slowed down like that, it kind of sounds like a truck commercial or something.
Yeah, exactly. Chevy trucks!
Exactly. Chevy trucks are awesome!
Yeah. Take it down, lift stuff! I do admit, you know what, they don't do that as much as they used to, but in the 80s and 90s, there was
Bob Seger days.
Oh, it was a great tradition.
Yeah.
Like, let's do that. Let's do this just for fun since we have a couple minutes here. I'm going to look for... let's say 80s truck commercials. There's got to be a good one here. Like, this one says hilarious Ford commercial. Let's see. Oh, it's an outtake. Let's see what this is. Just for funsies. Can you
believe it? See your local Ford dealer.
Boring. Okay. Not a fan.
Yeah, not a fan. Boring. I don't recall playing golf with him. All right, that's not the kind I was looking for. I want, like, Ram Tough, you know? Like, oh, here's one.
There's new value in Ram Tough Dodge Trucks. Not only Dodge.
No, it's not the same. We want the guy going.
No, that's the Love Boat guy, though, too, right? Like, that's the guy who used to do all the the announcing for ABC.
Well, maybe it's Like a Rock commercial.
Yeah, do a search for that.
All right, here we go. Like a Rock. Here we go.
America is still the land of rugged individualists.
Like a rock. I was strong as I could be.
I got a truck. It's a pretty good truck.
Living under a bridge in Kalamazoo now. Like please invite me to your convention.
I miss it. It's the it's basically the singer for the Enterprise theme song. That's right. That's what we're talking about.
Right, exactly.
We miss that. We miss whoever those people are. Bring those back.
Well, that was Bob Seger.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that song was, yeah. But that who did the, but who, like, there was like, I wasn't a, there were like generic singing people.
Yes, who, right, like session musicians, right.
Yeah, I miss that.
The Budweiser, you know.
Why is it no longer a thing? Why don't we have that?
I don't know.
Do you think it just fell out of favor? People don't trust it. It sounds fake or it's overly over the top. It must be some of those things. I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, The Real Men of Genius. That's the one I was trying to think of, Pops and Recline. Because that one parodies all that stuff. American
hero. Yeah, today we salute you.
Yeah, that guy's
once,
great.
I guess once it becomes parodied, it's not as popular to do it for real anymore.
Yeah, well, because you... Oh, hi.
Hello.
Hi, how are
you?
I
thought that was another, like, Johnson trick. Play some American song, so I'll come back.
No. I know my mom.
Would that work?
My mother's really... My mother loves doing those things. She's trying with all efforts, pulling out all the stops to try to get Wendy to come home. Just come home.
Well, it was Thanksgiving, and I call, and everyone's sitting there in a room. It's like an intervention.
Yeah.
And they're, like, playing the national anthem, and, like, Thatcher says to me, first thing, I haven't talked to the kid in, you know, 2 years, and he's like, so which is better, America or Sweden?
and keep in mind, when this is happening, Wendy's on a big screen TV in the living room at my brother-in-law's house.
Right.
And the room is full of, like, I don't know, like 25 people.
Yeah, and I'm holding my phone. That's where, you know, the quality of that picture was awesome,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and no stress at all. Everyone's staring at you, bated breath, waiting to hear whether you think Sweden or America's better.
Oh, no, and I said, that's such an American question to ask.
Yeah, that was pretty funny, I thought.
who's number one? I got to know who's number one.
Yeah, it's also a very Thatcher thing to ask.
Yeah, too. And but I just said, they're both great.
Yeah.
Good. That's the only correct answer.
Everyone know, gets right? a trophy. Everyone gets a trophy. It's fine.
I like all my children the same.
Well, Wendy, it's been a couple of weeks since the holidays. We've missed having you here. How are things there? I suppose you guys deal with the same sort of, oh, the holiday's over, everyone get back to school kind of problems, right?
Yeah, as if that were a thing. They have this whole week off as well.
Oh, so, they do?
Yeah,
oh,
it's a nightmare.
Well, Carter did too, which is nice, but that's a college thing's always different, but the regular kids, they all had to go back.
Yeah, they went Monday. Have you heard of Epiphany? It is a holiday. Have you heard of this
Epiphany?
Holiday?
No. Did someone have an epiphany and say we need another holiday or what?
So essentially, Sweden is essentially an atheist country at this point. Mm-hmm. But it used to be very, very Christian. So, you know, like how Americans sort of see religion as like freedom to do whatever you want. So they have a connection with religion that means like free to be religious. And Sweden's connection to religion is like it meant absolute control, and you know, so it just repels them.
Well, some stuff has happened in Europe to probably help solidify that.
Yeah, exactly, right. So for them, it's like, but every holiday is some Christian based something I've never heard of as a Christian myself. Right. I'm like, what the hell is that? Anyway, and no one can explain it because none of them go to church, so they don't know, but they're like, that's the day off work. So
what's what's Epiphany? Do you know what
Epiphany
it's
Epiphany is the day supposedly when the wise men found Jesus.
Oh.
And so how you celebrate is you bake a cake and you put a plastic baby Jesus in it, and then whoever finds the plastic baby gets like a wish. I'm not really sure.
Well, that's
really.
Like, so it's kind of like Mardi Gras.
Yeah, it's like Mardi Gras king cake. It's probably got the same origins or something.
They ripped it off.
Yeah, they might.
I know. Everything's ripped off from like the pagans originally, right?
Yeah, right.
Right.
Oh no, we owe the pagans everything now.
Mm-hmm. No, they were awesome.
Yeah, forget about the war on Christmas. It's a war on pagans. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. Do you remember Dad growing up? He'd always go, like, he'd give Mom some terrible present.
Yeah.
He'd be like, was just pagan anyway.
Yeah, he was. That was his excuse. He was so, yeah, if it was like a poopy present, like a dumb present or something, his thing would always be, I'm not supporting this pagan holiday. Like, he would right. always go the pagan.
That was his way to get out of it.
Yeah, he'd play the pagan card. Oh, I forgot about that. That's a great memory.
The damn pagans.
The damn pagans. As if, that's the thing about my dad. That is if there was this big group of practicing pagans. Well, I know there are pagans out there, like actual sort of organized pagans. But in his mind, they were like everybody who thought his gift was dumb was a pagan.
Well, they like the whole world conspired to create this holiday, which would set him up to fail because it did every year. And I blame the pagans because they started it.
I'm just glad to know where I got it. I knew there was some genetic legacy there, and now I know where I got my poor gift giving from.
Yes, and wrapping.
I wrapped things in blankets, Brian. I gave my brother a gift wrapped in a blanket. I didn't take time to wrap it in a wrapping paper. I took a blanket.
There you go. We got a pagan a blanket.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
A pagan in a blanket.
A pagan in a blanket.
I like it. Wendy, let's get back into the swing of things by doing a question for Therapy Thursday. Wendy's an actual therapist, helps real people with real problems. She comes on the show on Thursdays, as she has since the very beginning, and deals with these questions head on so that you can deal with them yourself. So we got this question from a 26-year-old woman. We're going to call this person Kay. That is not their real name. And they say this: Hello, Scott, Brian, and Wendy. I'm a 26-year-old woman who has been married to a wonderful guy for 3 years. Way back when I was 14, I met a girl who I will call Jess. Jess and I quickly discovered that our feelings for one another were romantic and started dating. Her parents disapproved and did their best to keep us apart. About 6 months into our relationship, Jess collapsed at a family outing, and when she was admitted to the hospital, they discovered a brain tumor. Because of its location, they determined that it would be inoperable, and that they could give her 3 to 5 years on chemo and radiation, or 6 months to a year in relative health before the tumor would kill her. She and her family took the second option. I don't know why you'd do that. Her family allowed me to visit her once, and then I was never able to see her again before she passed away roughly 8 months after the diagnosis. Obviously, I was heartbroken and grieved for a very long time, but eventually moved on, dated other women and men, and now here I am, 26 and happily married. Except I have found that with each step forward in my life, it seems that I relive the grieving process for Jess all over again. My wedding day, when we bought the house, when I got a huge promotion at work, all of these things seemed bittersweet because I couldn't ever shake the depression I felt because Jess was not part of my life. I have not lost anyone close in my family, so Jess is really the only person who I've had to deal with real grief over. But I just want to know if this is normal, or if I should be seeking help to move past this. My husband has always known about her, as I never hid it. I get the flowers and eat a slice of strawberry rhubarb pie, her favorite, at her grave every year on her birthday. But I can tell that even he is getting a bit tired of comforting me as I grieve over a girlfriend who died over a decade ago. Is there some step in the grieving process that I missed? Thank you for your advice, Kay. Where do you even start with that one?
So hold on, back up. You said you don't understand why they would make that choice.
The parents deciding to not do the treatment when she's 14 and not to do the treatment at all seems crazy to me.
Well, it could be a miserable.
Yeah, like the torture, and she's going to die anyway. I feel like that's the easy choice.
Well, I guess. Okay, so you get 3 to 5 years, but okay, filled with chemo and radiation. Easy, well, for me, okay, if you asked me today, yeah, I'd say, nope, I'm good. Thanks. I don't need it. But if you ask me when I was 14, I don't know what she said. Maybe she had a bigger part in the decision. But
you're 14 till 16, just sick. Really? You want to do that?
At least you're there and you got, you know, I don't know.
You know, that's
funny.
That's one of those things where you're deciding for somebody else, like, or you're deciding for you, like what you want to do. You don't want to lose this person. And so as a parent, you're saying, no, I want to spend more time with you,
right?
Where you're not basically saying, all right, do you want to live like this for the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, she made it. She says implicitly in the email that the parents made that decision. And that's all I'm saying.
Right. It's
like, no. It says that she and the parents made the decision.
Oh, they did?
She and her family took the second option.
Oh, you're right. They did. Yep. Yeah. I threw it all on mom and dad there. Yeah.
Well, I wonder where that's coming from.
That's, you can't say anything around Wendy, by the way, without something like,
right, I love
no,
that.
That's not true.
That makes sense to me. But I guess what I'm saying is if she was part of that decision, sure. It's only weird to me if it was decided for her. Because I feel like if you're going to die, no matter your age, you should get to choose. And if her choice was that, well, then great. If her choice was to live on and her parents said, no, we think this is the other way, then I guess fine, too. It's not like we're dealing with pets here where the pets have no say. I guess that's what I'm saying.
And I'm only bringing that up because I thought it was interesting because my instant reaction is like, yeah, of course, that's the choice they made. And you're like, no, why would they make that choice? And I find that so intriguing when it's so easy for somebody to say what they okay, you know what it is? It's that weird meme with the dress that was white or gold or blue. Remember that thing?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So I had experience looking at that. So, of course, I'm way late to every game, and I'm like, what is this dress thing?
That just arrived in Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah, just now. No. Of course, Adam finds out 2 minutes later, and then he thinks I know these things, and I don't. So then when I finally see it, I saw it as brown and blue. And I was like, wait a minute, you think this is white? And he's like, yep. I'm like, are you on crack? There's no way. And I had this, like, unbelievable like surety, which is what was happening with everyone, right? Is like, how is anyone seeing this so differently from I am? And what I had happened later, this is weird. I went to show Abe because Abe's like, what are you guys arguing? Like, let me show you. And I pull up the dress and I saw it as white for like 10 seconds.
Ah!
And then it went brown and blue again.
That's funny.
And I was like, oh my gosh, my reality is no longer my reality. Like, it was so, but it was so cool at the same time because it was like, okay, if you really stood in someone's shoes, you can't make decisions the way you would when you're not in their shoes, right? Because when your shoes and the dress is brown, anyway, so that was all. It was just intriguing. Sure. I think that's such an intriguing thing.
Well, for the record, I'm a big fan of the idea that we should be able to, like, I don't understand why people want to keep people hooked up to machines for years and years and years.
Right.
Or here's what I really think. If somebody's, let's say somebody's in their, I don't know, 60s, and they say, sir, I'm sorry, but I've got to inform you, you've been diagnosed with the form of whatever. We could start treatment and that you could maybe get another 10 years or whatever. Or you could just, you know, die in 3 months. I think that person should be able to say, yeah, I'll go. Mm-hmm. I'll just want to go. And I think it sort of depends on where you live, whether you can do that kind of thing or not, or who gets to say is different depending on where you live. I don't know. But I always feel like we're so quick to go, oh, the dog, it broke its leg. We've got to put her down.
Oh, yeah.
But we can't seem to do it with grandma. Keep her around forever. You know?
Yeah. Well, and there's something, and we will get to the email, everyone, I promise. But there is something to be said for the modern form of grief is completely unknown until the last 100 years, right? When we started washing our hands and we stopped like wiping our butts with our hands. I think there's people still doing that. But when we started practicing personal hygiene, life expectancy doubled, right? Prior to that, people were dying at younger ages and of things like cutting their hands, right? The frequency of death was common. So, you know, here's a 26-year-old who hasn't known any death but this one person. That would have been unheard of 200 years ago for a 26-year-old to only know one person, right? Mm-hmm. So the reality of what grief was, the practice of grief, what death was, you know, I think I've said this on the show, how living rooms were renamed. They used to be the parlor where you would have your wakes and the funerals. And so there'd be dead bodies in your house all the time.
Is that why they call them living rooms? It was like this enlightened moment.
It was an advertising switch.
That's hilarious. I love that. That is amazing to me.
That's crazy.
Right. And so all of that was to like, it's like to clean up death, right? So think about what anyone's average experience with death is. It is very minimal. So here's it. Did I tell you about the Abe's teacher died?
No.
Oh, this is awful. So I swear we'll get to the email, I promise. So anyway, his best math teacher he's ever had in the history of all of his life. And she's very young, has a couple small kids and a husband, and got really ill. And they found she had a brain tumor that kind of popped or exploded or something. And so she died instantly. And it was Thursday, Monday, all the kids go to school. Everyone just cries all day. I mean, it was so traumatic for everyone. It was very, very awful. Mm. And he says to me, Mom, I think I might be the youngest kid ever who has someone close to them die. First of all.
Wow.
No.
Yeah.
Second of all, But that's
I to feel like a, that.
Yeah, an interesting reaction, because he's like, he knows no one who's ever lost anyone. At least they've never said it out loud to him. And he feels so like this isn't something that should happen until you're in your 50s. You know what I mean? He has no concept of that. Anyway, and what was really fun, sounds like a terrible word to use, but it was really good, was that I could do this sort of preventative, helpful sort of science project at the same time. He came home. We talked for ever about it. We cried together. He was asking what's normal. He asked at one point later in the night, we talked for a long time. Later in the night, he said, I'm feeling really angry. Is that normal? I'm like, absolutely. That's normal. And we talked about stages of grief and what that looks like. And it's not like one to the next, but all of that stuff is common and people feel that it's okay. If you want to cry, if you, you know, of course he took advantage of not going to school the next day, because what kid wouldn't? Mm-hmm. So we had this, like, I thought, when do you get a chance to actively go through the grieving process with your child where it's not as complicated for you? It's not me losing someone too. It's just him losing someone.
Right.
Anyway, it was sort of, I hate to say a positive, but it was that came out of it is sort of this proactive grieving, which brings us to the emailer.
Yeah.
Is here she is as a 15-year-old, probably the first time in love. That's the thing I'm getting from it. And you have, it's complicated. You have it restricted. I'm assuming there was sneaking going on, which makes it even stronger. Mm-hmm. And then very little access to her while she's sick and dying. And the only closure you get is that one visit, right? Mm-hmm. So you're really just setting her up for not grieving properly in that sense. The circumstances were such that it set it up for this to be a logical outcome that 10 years later, she still has very, very strong feelings of grief associated with the death of this person.
Is it weird that I'm very angry at the parents of the person who died for being such uptight wieners about it? Is that normal?
No, because it's not weird.
Makes
it's
sense.
Because it did harm her in this situation. But I also think 10 years ago, I can imagine those parents have no idea what, you know, various sexual preferences meant, or that this woman is obviously bisexual. Like, what does that even mean? And your kid's dying and you're, whatever.
No,
I don't know.
I get it. I'm just saying that their own, you know, freaking whatever they are, the children of post-war World War II grandparents.
Baby boomers. Scott,
yeah, baby boomers. Those are the terms. They're just so... Yeah. This is so set on, well, this has all just been such an ugly situation. And on top of it, now she's dying. And I can just hear what they're saying. And it makes me angry. Right. So that's all. I just wanted to get that out.
You can have your own reaction, which is the key here. The key is everyone grieves differently.
Right.
Everyone feels differently. And no one can sort of stand in judgment of that's okay or that's not okay. Or you should be done grieving now. Or it's, you know, time is up, ready to move on with your life. So there's a couple things to note about grief, especially with loss of life, because there's grief associated with other things, but we're just going to talk about when someone close to you dies. So, you know, those various stages include sort of denial, bargaining. You've heard these probably before, anger, and then eventually acceptance. Acceptance is the one we all hope you get to. The challenge is most of baby boomers and generation before and plenty of people sort of are really uncomfortable with grieving. And remember, we don't ever practice this, right? Because no one ever dies. Mm-hmm. And when they do, it's tragic and awful and overwhelming and huge. It's not common. Like, you know, someone got kicked by the cow.
So you're saying, but so I can get the math straight in my head. The idea is that we used to have people dying by the time they were 30 quite a bit. It was not an uncommon thing because
injury diseases,
we'd make up names for them. Oh, he got hit by the consumption or whatever. But really it was, you know, pneumonia or whatever the thing is we called it. And now we have our heads, around those things. We're smarter about those things. We have medical situations worldwide that mean people are living much longer than they used to. And the natural move has been less people are dying. Therefore, when it does happen, it is something we're not used to, so we're not desensitized to it, so we're being hit harder by it, therefore we're trying to avoid it more, therefore we're making calling parlors living rooms as a way of saying, ah, take that, death. Like we're
right. Well, and we've swung to the opposite side, which is where death, I think, used to be more normal, and something that an average person could experience and would experience, and death with animals. I mean, there's a lot more interaction with animals when you're on a farm, right? Mm-hmm. And death there. To the other extreme, where if there's anyone dying, it's as if it's not possible. Like, how has science not cured death yet? Mm-hmm. You know, we're, and it's partly because we've cured a lot of stuff. Like, we don't die from infections usually anymore. I guess you still can, but you know what I'm saying? There's lots of progress that's been made, but our brains glom onto the safety of medicine. This is why we do what everyone says who wears a white lab coat. Like there's a God complex there for a reason. Like, they can save us because medicine has come so far, but obviously that doesn't save everyone's lives. I think that's why cancer is so terrifying on one hand, because first of all, its existence it's grown partly because we live longer, mm-hmm. right? You live longer, long enough to have your cells malfunction and cancer to develop. We also have more toxins in the environment or whatever. So we're dealing with this, it's like the killer that could be in you right now, and it freaks us all out, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of expect it to have been eliminated, like we know how to handle germs, but it's not quite the same. So it can be really shocking, and I think that's an element for whatever the parents were going through, is, you know, beyond anything I want to imagine. But you know, they handled it in such a way that they gave Kay one chance to talk to Jess, and that was that. So now go back to your 15-year-old self, right? In love for the first time. You think of the level of imprinting that's doing on her brain, mm-hmm. and it's making Jess one of the most important people in the history of her life. Mm-hmm. And you can see it now at 26 years old. That is, it's still true to some extent. So what I want to know, you know, I'd love to have you guys be the therapist. Tell me what you think it means that she has these depressive sort of memory episodes about Jess every time a good, happy event happens in her life.
Well, I think isn't one factor here that it seems like a lot of time, but really it isn't. She's only been 10 years off of this, like right. 10 years away from it. Mm-hmm. A decade. 12, yeah. A decade is starting to seem to me like a tiny increment of time. And that's a product of my perspective and my own age. And as I get older, I'm like, well, I've had 4 of these now.
Right.
And they happen a lot quicker than I expected them to. And they're kind of shorter than I thought they were.
Right.
And, you know, Nick went from 5 to 15 in like a flash of an eye. And to them, it's your whole life. Like, to Nick, 10 years is all of it. Like, yep. There is no, he doesn't remember anything before 5, really. And that is his entire life. So from 16 to 26 is a very brief period. So I think what's happening is it's easy to see that as a much bigger, drawn-out thing, because that's the only time you have behind you.
Right.
That isn't to say the only solution for things like this is just lots of time needs to pass so that you can forget about it or whatever. But I have a feeling that it's a double-edged thing. It's time being seeming long, but really actually being not that long ago. That plays a factor. The other factor is she was never allowed to grieve for her openly. There were all the walls that were up to keep her from A, having the relationship in the first place, and then B, having anything more than a single visit, and being sort of just shut out from that. I think those two things have combined to just make it so anytime anything reminds her of it, it just comes back. So that's my theory. Brian, what do you say?
Interesting.
I was taking the kind of the guilt direction on this, that she feels some sort of guilt that Jess is not there to share these moments with her, even though it wasn't her choice. It wasn't, you know, she's obviously not at all responsible for what happened to Jess, the tumor or the death or the way her parents reacted and keeping them apart. But I think it's like a guilt that she's there to enjoy these happy things and that Jess is not.
Mm-hmm. It's like survivor's guilt.
Yeah. Survivor's guilt, yes.
Interesting. You guys are good.
Or imposter. What's that? I like that imposter syndrome. It's kind of similar, right? Where people feel like they're they're getting the good stuff and don't deserve it.
Right.
Similar right. And, to that. And Jess or Kay's life sounds great, mm-hmm. right?
Sounds
like,
all right.
Great mm-hmm. job, great yeah. husband, great house. Like, life is good. So I think, you know, I think Brian's theory has probably some weight for sure. And Scott, I think you're absolutely right too. The 10 years is not long enough to be fully like, I don't think about Jess anymore. But there is something going on. And she asked the question, which I feel like, you know, I'm so predictable these days. Yes, go see a therapist. but why? It's because she has a little bit of what we call complicated grief or like prolonged bereavement, which means, especially if it's complicated the time of the passing, often you'll have this with families where like if the parent was abusive and then the parent passes away, it's complicated, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not all death is straightforward, but you know, it's not straightforward. There wasn't a lot of closure and a lot of ability to openly grieve. And you're a complicated emotional being at 15 anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So you take all of that and it's kind of stuck a little bit. So yes, okay, go see someone. You probably only need a session or two. This isn't a long, long process, but there is definitely something going on that you need to actively like the go to her grave every year on her birthday.
That's yeah, and that's something that came up as a question with me. Is that would a therapist recommend that she stop doing that, or do you feel like she needs that? Like that is her way of processing this and getting through it.
Right. And that's actually a good therapist would not tell her to stop doing that. The good therapist would help her figure out what she's doing. And then eventually she either stops because she doesn't need it anymore mm-hmm. because the actual processing or grieving has occurred. Because it sounds like it's snippets of processing, right? Something good happens. Maybe it's survivor's guilt. Maybe it's just like this sort of always happiness mixed with a little melancholy that she experiences mm-hmm. that is tied to Jess. And it may be something else entirely. It could be deserve level stuff. Like, you know, why is my life so good? Which could be directly tied to Jess and it might not be, but Jess is getting it's playing that role. That's why this is a little more complicated. And yes, her spouse of, you know, a couple years is a great guy and is understanding, but at 10, 15 years from now, if this is still actively happening, mm-hmm. you know, I think he might run out of patience.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Because you know, he's cool and he's just like, whatever you need, which is the right attitude. But I think it's her responsibility to find out if this isn't more complicated than needs to be and that she needs to actively process it. Cause here's the reality, like even a support group, might be a helpful place to go because one of the things that happens when people have prolonged grief is they don't feel the relief like other people might feel after time has passed. So Scott, you mentioned that time passes, you know, it's supposed to get a little bit better mm-hmm. and it really does typically feel better. You can move on with your life. And obviously she's moved on with her life. Schedule wise, it's not like she's sitting home and crying, mm-hmm. but some of the acuteness of the pain doesn't quite go away mm-hmm. like it does for sort of normal processing grief. And they can be a little bit stuck. And there's some people that are totally debilitated, like don't move on for years and years and years. And so she is definitely not worst case scenario at all, but that processing can be really helpful with other people in grief because they're okay with you talking about Jess. I mean, that's the purpose of the therapy appointment is that here's a person who's compassionate and can understand what you're going through and can be empathetic and relate and help and let you talk about whatever you need to talk about. Mm-hmm. Cause you can't do that with your friend again. Your friend's like, okay, I don't want to hear this anymore. Mm-hmm. Cause people move on quicker who are not close to the death. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have that hiccup and it starts to impact your relationships with the people in your regular life. Mm. And that's usually one of your signs when you've got a little complicated grief going on is if everyone else is just like, okay, enough, or they're kind of avoiding you and you're not getting support. Yeah. You know, if this is 2 months out and people are doing that, well, then your friends are jerks. But
yeah, exactly. You need new friends.
Right. But like a couple years in, it's maybe something you need to really seek some help for.
Yeah.
I found actually a great book that might be just good for everyone generally. who has mourning they need to do. It's called The Mourning Handbook, as in M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, by Helen Fitzgerald. And it goes through, like, handling everything from funeral to afterwards to people of every age to just so many questions it answers. So that's a little more for the kind of active stages of grief and, you know, it could be helpful for someone to read whose loved one is grieving and they're not as close to the death, you know, kind of how to support them. But, you know, with Kay's situation, this is a little deeper, a little more complicated.
Yeah.
And I just, more than anything, I just don't want it to become something. Mm-hmm. Like right now, it's still pretty harmless.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to know what her at 36 or 46 or 56 is going to experience if some of it's not resolved or there right. isn't and, something and worked
the,
through.
And how the people, the other people in her life are going to be reacting to it.
Right, yeah. right. And at the same time, it's nothing's wrong with her.
Mm-hmm.
For that right. to have occurred at that age, I mean, there's such vulnerable stages in our brain's development for certain events. And first love, I'm assuming, 15, unrequited, whatever, like mom and dad, you can't, blah, blah, all of that. You take all of that and mash it up and you're going to get this, right?
Yeah.
So totally normal. But, you know, maybe, it, and her reaching out is a sign too that she also is maybe not so comfortable with it, keep with it going on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, maybe in the end it'll be strawberry and rhubarb pie, happy birthday visits, and that's it.
Yeah.
And that would be great. That's why the therapist can't say, stop doing that. Because it may be the thing that she just, that's how she can kind of keep the memory alive. A lot of people struggle with, but if I don't keep doing these rituals that remind me of the person, then they're really gone.
Mm.
So that's a challenge as well. So she's got to figure out if that's what she's doing or if there's something else or if it has something to do with her own life, her own family, her own self at 15, her own regrets it up, you know. It's this is why you pay someone.
Yeah. Pay, find a professional. I think that's good advice. I mean, they're in a lot of ways, it's funny. I think a lot of people can commiserate. I've never really quite gotten over, not entirely got, I mean, I don't know what the term, I don't even define getting over something, but I still think about dad all the time, right?
Right.
So,
and why would you not? I mean,
right.
it's so formative, right? He's your father.
Yeah.
It's not like some dude you met twice, like that doesn't impact you, but your father is perpetually, or your mother, or your sibling, or your child, God forbid, you know, mm-hmm. like there's roles that people play. There's always an emptiness and that is okay. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I guess part of this is the romantic part, right? Like the romantic part has been replaced. She's with someone else. And so the tendency for everyone around her might be like, you've got a husband, right? Like, but that that isn't what it is in my guessing.
She doesn't seem like she's grieving for the romance.
She's right. grieving for the place this person in such a pivotal part of her life took. And she took up a lot of brain cells, like a lot of the mapping in there. And that's just like your dad did. And just like my dad did. And that's why all of us are going to grieve the way we're going to grieve and in the timing we're going to grieve. But there mm-hmm. is a subset that it's about 10% of the population actually that can get really stuck in complicated grief. And often it's because the circumstances were complicated.
Yeah. It sounds complicated on her mm-hmm. side.
Yeah, it does. Sure. But also mild. If I just wanted to tell, pretty mild.
Yeah.
It could always be so much worse.
Yeah. Everything can be, right? So don't feel too bad. You're way down on that scale of how worse it could be or how bad.
Yeah. But 26, perfect time to do this. Like work through this, see what, and then, you know, include your husband in what you learn in your therapy sessions. And so he's sort of aware of the process and ask for his help if you need it, if you need him to just stand back and let you process it. Great. But don't make it too much about him, but don't exclude him either. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, remind me the book name again. Was it
The Mourning Handbook.
Yeah, spelled like mourning, like you're mourning over somebody.
Yeah, and Helen Fitzgerald is the author.
The Mourning Handbook is to listen to our show. That's very
The Mourning Handbook.
That's so depressing. Yeah. There is a good blog as well that it's kind of nice for people. It's called griefhealingblog.com. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's someone just compiling a bunch of stuff, good research, good, you know, and, you know, pretty warm and fuzzy.
Looking
and
at it right now. Oh, yeah, look at that. They have a lovely header that's soothing in its own way.
Yeah, very calming. And yeah, so, it, you know, for a lot of people, you know, I know a few people have lost someone very close to them. And, you know, their companies gave them like 1 week bereavement, right? So they have a week.
Get over it. You got a week.
Yep. Exactly. And they're expected that next Monday to come in and just function, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, that's not real. But that is the sort of outward, I think, the outward manifestation of how we all sort of feel on the inside, which is like, be over this by now. Or you be over this. Like, it's uncomfortable. We're not great at mourning with each other, right? Mm-hmm. Think about this for a second, everyone out there. When was the last time something happened tragically to someone else, or there was a death or a loss, and you're like, okay, I just want to say the right thing. Oh my gosh, what is the right thing to say? And whatever came out of your mouth, you just felt awkward. Mm-hmm. And the other person either just looked at you like, what? Because you said the worst thing, or you said nothing, and that person feels alone. Like, we're really bad at this. I feel like it's just a lack of practice and a sort of lack of education. And, you know, it isn't until you really experience it. I think I told you guys this once, but when Dad died, my second thought was, I want to call all the people I know who had lost a parent, which were quite a few actually, mm-hmm. and just say, I am so sorry.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea.
Yeah. It's an intense level of empathy suddenly enters your life.
Yeah. And you just think, I've never said anything right to anyone before.
Yeah.
And then even after, you still feel like you may not say the right thing. So just know, everyone who doesn't feel like they're going to say the right thing, you're not. No one ever does. Mm-hmm. But not saying anything can also just be as worse as saying the worst thing, you know, just, you know, try to grieve with each other. It's pretty
find
hard.
Your humanity.
Yes.
All right, well, this is all good advice, and it's good to be back on the therapy train. Wendy's
too many holidays lately.
I know.
I know.
Really,
what?
Celebrating. I need a war against holidays.
Epiphany. It was epiphany.
Epiphany.
Yesterday.
Yes. We will certainly do this again next week. And also, Wendy's the progress is being made on a blog. We're also talking about putting the segments from this show on the therapy show RSS feed. So there's podcast record of everything we talk about. There's some stuff going on. So we will keep you informed as we get closer to the outer limits of whatever.
Of space.
I ran out of words to say. Wendy, have a good time. Our best to the family, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye now.
We'll see you.
All right. I don't know if you've noticed, but my sister's also a quick goodbyer.
Oh, yeah. I figure it's a familial thing.
Oh, big time. Johnson thing for sure. Yeah. My mom's terrible at it. She'll drag on the phone for days, but my dad used to be just, all right, that's it. But out. speaking of being out, let's be done. Let's be done with the show. Let's go on to what's going to happen later today. Today at 1 o'clock p.m. Mountain Time, there will be a PM TMS PM. You can watch it live or get the show on the feed the following day. That's because you guys support us at patreon.com/TMS. Thank you so much for that. As always, it makes a huge difference. It makes all the difference, honestly, for us to continue to do the show the way we need to do it and want to do it.
And we have some cool stuff coming for people who are patrons.
Big time.
Yes.
So watch for that. Announcement soon, probably next week, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think so.
Monday or Tuesday. Frogpants.com/TMS is the website. TheMorningStream@gmail.com is our email address. You can call us and leave us voicemails. We'll play some of those on Monday's show at 801-471-0462. On Twitter, @Coverville, @ScottJohnson, @MorningStream. And our subreddit, where you can submit stories for this show even. Frogpants.reddit.com. All right, Brian. Let's go.
All right.
You got some music?
I do. Tim Watson wrote in, said, encouraged by the 5th anniversary of TMS. Congratulations, by the way. I thought I'd mention that my podcast, the as yet unnamed London Theater podcast, is also 5 years old this week. Cool. Please note, I had very good reasons for calling it as yet unnamed 5 years ago. I can't remember what those reasons were, but against all advice, I'm sticking to the name. Show the love, though, Tim Watson.
Nice.
Is he a dentist?
Watley is who you're thinking of.
Watley, right. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. It was
Walter White.
Yeah, Walter White playing Dr. Whatley.
Exactly. He had a bunch of different ideas for a quest. So I'm going to pick one of them because it's awesome. This is Christy McCall's cover of Lou Reed's Perfect Day, because I want you guys all to go out and have a perfect day. Helping her with this track is Evan Dando of the Lemonheads, who's got just that great deep voice. This came out in 2005 on Christy McCall's Best Of compilation. She's great. And if you're not familiar with Christy McCall, she is the female singer on Fairy Tale of New York with the Pogues.
Oh.
She also had a great cover of Billy Bragg's A New England. And if you enjoy this, then I urge you to go to YouTube or Spotify or whatever your streaming music service is of choice and listen to Christy McCall's A New England, because it's such a great song.
Cool.
This is her cover of Perfect Day. Enjoy it, and we'll see you in a few hours.
Bye.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. Then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on. Just a perfect day. Problems all left alone. Weekenders on our own. It's such fun.
Just a perfect day. You made me forget myself. Such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Before time runs out, try again.
Okay.
Try again.
Try again.
I think they meant Japanese man tried to sound American. Here's another one.
Wear it on your dominant arm.
Wear it on.
Dominant arm.
Dominant arm.
Activate Pac-Man.
Activate.
Yeah, that guy's great. Isn't he great?
You get it. Best effort.